So hear now a reading from the Word of the Lord. For I do not want you to be ignorant of the fact, brothers and sisters, that our ancestors were all under the cloud and all passed through the sea. They were baptized into Moses. They were baptized into Moses and they in the cloud and in the sea. They ate the same spiritual food and drank the same spiritual drink. They drank from the rock that accompanied them, and that rock was Christ. Nevertheless, God was not pleased with them. He scattered their bodies in the wilderness. This occurred as examples to keep us from setting our hearts on evil things as they did. Do not be idolaters, as it is written. They sat down to eat and to drink and got up and indulged in revelry. We should not commit sexual immorality, as some of them did. In one day, 23,000 of them died. We should not test Christ, as some of them did, and were killed by snakes. And do not grumble, as some of them did, and were killed by the destroying angel. These things happened to them to serve as examples and were written down to us whom the culmination of the ages has come. So if you are standing firm, be careful that you do not fall. No temptation has overtaken you but what is common to all mankind. And Christ is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are tempted, He will provide a way out so that you can endure it. So, dear friends, flee from idolatry. This is the word of the Lord. And we say together, thanks be to God. Now, if you want to go someplace in life, and if you want to get to the place to where you want to go, you must be willing to pass through a test. You never get to where you want to go easily. There's always some hardships along the way. There's always lessons that have to be learned. But perhaps one of the greatest movies of all time that taught us this is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. How many of you like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory? At least seen it? Yeah? Okay, that's better participation than earlier in the service. So thank you. May know, if you've not seen the movie, I'm about to give a spoiler alert. If you've seen the movie, this is what you'll know, is that Willy Wonka decides to put 6 golden tickets in Wonka bars, and it's so that whoever wins the 6 tickets, they can come and tour the factory in a never-seen-before fashion. Nobody had ever been in the chocolate factory, and so they send out the golden tickets, and there's a frenzy among media and people trying to be the one to find the golden ticket. And finally, there are 6 winners. Now, what the winners do not know, they think they're just going to this factory that they've never seen before. But in fact, they are actually being tested. Wonka is set to retire, and he doesn't have any sons, so he's looking for an heir to take over a family business of sorts. And so the whole business is at their disposal. They just don't know that yet. And each one along the way has to pass through certain tests. And what it proves is that what they were weakest at is where they begin to fail. Now, first is Augustus. No, you are fine, Mike. Go back. Augustus. I like Augustus because he likes food. And I like Augustus because he likes chocolate. And in that first scene, he comes in to all of this candy land, and there's a river flowing with chocolate. Now, if any of you ever get rich, would you please put in a chocolate river? I will come. Just keep some sanitary rules. By the way, if you go to a wedding, never eat the chocolate out of the chocolate fountain. Just don't do it. But this chocolate river, of course, has to be not contaminated because human beings have never been in it. And Augustus has a choice. Have you noticed this? He's sitting at the river and he has a choice. He can decide. He could have the chocolate river right now and as much as he wants. Or he doesn't know it. But if he was to wait, he can have the whole factory. And in this moment, there's a battle going on between the God of right now and the God of what's next. And we know the outcome. If you've seen the movie, he chooses, of course, the God of right now and misses what's coming next. Now then there's Violet. Violet, of course, holds the world record for chewing the same piece of gum the longest. Now, I thought the chocolate river is disgusting, but chewing the same piece of gum for, 7 years? Is that right? And she just cannot overcome the temptation when she comes into the everlasting gobstopper. Don't you wish they actually made one of those? That'd be so cool. And she has this moment where she's in front of the assembly line and she takes the gobstopper and Wonka's like, no, don't, please. He's so excited about this. And has this moment where she can have the everlasting gobstopper, she can have right now, or she could have the whole factory. And there's this war going on, and of course we know she chooses the everlasting gobstopper, and they don't have the blueberry just right in the equation, and so she swells up like a blueberry. One more, Mike TV. Mike TV loves TV. He watches TV all of the time, and he gets an opportunity to pass through television, and he's a little miniature me. And in this moment, he has a decision to make. He can either have be on television, or he could have the whole factory. He doesn't know he can have the whole factory, but he only knows what he can have now. But because he chooses what he wants now, he misses on what would come next. And I think this next slide summarizes all of these for you. Do you remember Veruca? Can I just say it? What a little brat. A spoiled, I don't like her. And you have this moment where she wants a golden egg. But she doesn't just want a golden egg. When does she want it? Now. And what she doesn't know is she could have the whole factory. She could have what's coming next, but she misses what is next because she's so focused on what is right now. You see, we're in this series talking about gods at war, and so much of our lives, I think, comes down to this. We're faced with a decision, and we're really faced with these choices every day. We can choose between what is right now in front of us, or we can choose what's next. Now, here's the problem we face. We don't always know what's next. If we knew what was next, it would be easy to discipline ourselves now. But what we don't realize is that if we indulge in what is right now, it will disqualify us, cause us to forfeit. We will no longer be a candidate for what is next. There's something that I know about God, and I hope you know about God, is that you can always trust Him for the future. God's plan is always better and greater moving forward. He never stays stagnant. He's always at work doing something more and better all the time. Now, I do need to give a disclaimer to this sermon. There is sometimes where next is now. So we wait for what is next all of the time, and we never get it. We miss it because we think, well, maybe something better is going to happen. Now, I'm not preaching that sermon today, but as a personality type who is indecisive, are any of you indecisive? Are you going to admit that? Yeah. I am majorly indecisive. What I do, my struggle is this, is that I keep waiting and waiting and waiting because I want to make sure it's the right thing. Sometimes next is now, but that's a different sermon for a different day. Today's sermon is the other half of this struggle, is that so often our temptation is for what is now and we miss what is next. And so when we think about human beings and what our struggle is, the struggle we have as human beings is that every desire we have is for now. Think about every desire in our life, everything we decide that we want, whether that want is right or whether that want is wrong, none of us want to have to wait to get it. do we? Now, we're willing to wait because sometimes we have to wait, but if we had the option to get it right now, we would take it right now. Because once we decide we want what we want it now. And so every desire inside of us tells us, go for it now. Whatever you can get now is better than what you can get later. Because you don't know what you can get later, but you do know what you can get now. And if you miss it now, maybe there's nothing else later. But what if what is next is better than what is now? What if? I'm just suggesting the question. I have a personal belief about the answer to that question, but you may not have that same belief, and that's okay. But what if we miss out on so much in life because we're so quick to go for now instead of waiting for what is next? Paul gives us four stories in the text today. And I find them interesting. There's some common themes that you'll find throughout of them, and I have them on a slide for you. See, this is the other thing. You're here on spring break weekend, you get slides. I hate slides. That's why I never use them. But you get slides because some people really like them and they help. But these are the four stories Paul gives us in the text. He talks about four of the examples where the Israelites failed. Now, here's what's interesting to me, that the Israelites were not some young Christians prone to fall. What's interesting to me is he talks about them as being delivered people, that they all were under the cloud. The cloud, of course, was recognition of God's presence, that He was leading them. They were God's people. God was faithful to them. God was with them. The whole world could tell because of the cloud. And they all passed through in the sea. Do you remember? Their enemies were behind them. The sea's in front of them. That's quite a corner to be backed into. And God just goes, whoop, walls it up on each side. They walk through on dry ground. Have you ever been in a pond? It is disgusting on your bare feet. Because it is muck. So it wasn't just that the water was parted, it was dry ground. God had done miraculous things in the lives of the Israelites. Nevertheless, so these spiritually fed people, these spiritually mature people who had been delivered and God's presence was in their life, here's where they failed. With idols, with sexual immorality, with putting the Lord to the test, and with complaining or grumbling. And I noticed something. There was a cause that led to each one of these symptoms. That's all these are. They're symptoms of their lives. But here's the cause. They were impatient. It was the God of now and trusting instead of trusting what God had next. So in Exodus chapter 32, do you remember the story? Moses goes up the mountainside and he receives the Ten Commandments. And actually, the way I read the text is that they could have listened in to the voice of God for the entire conversation. The same glory that Moses was in, the people could have had. When Moses came down the mountain, his face was glowing with brightness from the glory of the Lord. The people could have had that, except they said, no, we're afraid. Keep our distance. See, the first problem came is that they really didn't want to be in the presence of God. They started making excuses for why they shouldn't be there. Now that's still another sermon for another day. So Moses goes back up the mountain to receive the Ten Commandments. He was up there 40 days and 40 nights, and somewhere in the 40 days and 40 nights, what did they say? They noticed Moses was so long in coming down. They grew impatient. They wanted a God right now because they didn't know if God would have anything next for them. Had God been quick to come down, they never would have sinned. You go to the story of when they committed sexual immorality. I'm just amazed at this, that the consequence was that 23,000 died in a single day. I don't know 23,000 people. But while they were staying in Shittim, they were wandering in the wilderness. This is like when you're on a road trip, and you're only supposed to stay a night or two at a place, and then you move on to the next leg of your trip. This was just a leg in the journey. They weren't supposed to stay there very long. They were only supposed to be there a couple nights, and let's just say they decided to go out on the town because they wanted what was now instead of waiting for what could be next, what God had for them next. And then they put the Lord their God to the test. what does it say? But the people grew, say it, impatient along the way. You ever been on a trip and you just want to get there? You ever been walking with the Lord and you're like, okay, Lord, I've been patient. I just want to get there. I just need a resolution. I just want this to be over. And we grow patient along the way, and so we look for another way, because the God of now will compete with what God has next for us. And then they grumbled. I got to be careful on this one, because you know who they grumbled to? The leaders. Basically what they're saying, we're not getting to the promised land close enough. You have gone too far in how you're leading the people. We don't like the direction you're going. Now, let me say this. Leaders don't always have the right direction. There are times that leaders, and especially church leaders, can get prideful, and the elders need to come around and say, whoa, hold on. But there are times that grumbling people just aren't going to be happy no matter what the leaders do. They want results quicker. They want things to get there sooner. And so they grumble. The God of now starts competing with what God has next for them. I noticed something in all of this. It wasn't just that they were impatient. The second thing that I would tell you, did you notice how severe the consequences were? I don't know about you, but I kind of want to put a pause when I'm reading the Scripture and say, hold on, God, let's sit down. Because you know, God isn't just far away, God is here with us. And sometimes I always view God as being far away, and sometimes in my prayers I have to say, okay, God's sitting right next to me, what am I going to say to Him? This is what I'd say to Him. Don't you think it's a bit extreme? Don't you think that killing 23,000 people is just like a little bit over the top? Don't you think maybe, let's just say you picked the worst one out of all of them. Don't you think that sets the example for everybody else? I mean, these are just the questions I have. I don't have answers for them. I just noticed that the consequences are severe. Now, some of you will never put the Lord to the test. You know why? How many of you have a great fear of snakes? They were tested, and what did He do? He set loose a bunch of snakes. Did any of you see the story this week? There's a news article about a man in Texas. Now, this is normal for Texas, so I guess if you don't like snakes, don't live in Texas. He went to fix his cable TV. Something wasn't working, and he looked underneath the house, and he saw a few snakes, a few rattlesnakes. I think they removed 45 or 47. There's a video, and I had a lot of things to do this week, so I procrastinated by watching that video. Some of them were some big snakes, and I thought, this guy is nuts. But it gave me a picture of these consequences. Just thinking about being encamped in the wilderness, and they had to be poisonous snakes to kill them. And just everywhere they stepped, every nook and cranny, here they were. And I think, God, I know the people should have more faith, but really, doesn't it seem a bit extreme? And then, I mean, come on, God, we all grumble. We all complain. I mean, in some ways, you could almost ask the question when Jesus said, my God, why have you forsaken me? It was a legitimate complaint, if you want to call it that. Why have these severe consequences? Why open the earth and swallow them whole? I don't have any answers, but I would say this. The God of now will not only keep us from what God has for us next, but we often will pay the price for the consequences of our sin. And the consequences of sin are severe. There's so much that sin takes from us. And sometimes we don't even know it, because we don't know all that we miss out on because of that sin. And I want you to know there is an ultimate consequence for sin. Sin always leads to separation from the Father, but the difference of being here on this earth, alive, breathing today, is that God still is pursuing us and after us, and we still have the opportunity to repent of those sins and come back and be at one with Him and His people. But there's coming a day where there is eternal separation from the Father. That's a consequence of sin. Now, hell was not created for you and for I. It was created for Satan and his angels, for his demons. But for those who live in disobedience, these consequences are severe. And I hope that what the text does more than anything else is it just tells us this battle between the God of now and what God has next, it matters. We think that it's just not very harmful. But I really want it. I mean, if it was that bad, why would I have the desire for it? The consequence of this thing is severe. So let me help us here just a little bit. I don't know about you, but when I look and say idols, let's just cross that one off the list. But really, when they were looking for idols, you know what they were looking for? We don't know what's happened to this man, Moses, so make for us gods who will lead us. They were looking for direction. And so the place that so often happens is when God takes His time revealing His direction to us sometimes. And there's times that we have a time frame and we want a decision, and so we start to get a little bit anxious about the direction that we need to go. God's telling us, wait, stop. It's like I have to tell Emerson sometimes, we have this little joke and she'll be flying through the house and I'll stop and go, slow down. And now she'll stop and take her hands and... But sometimes it's as if God comes and stands in our way and says, slow down. And I don't know about you, but that just makes me want to hit the gas faster. No, God, come on, come with me. And so often when we're in these places that we're looking for direction in our life, this is when the God of now will come. This is when we'll be tempted. It's when we want answers, need answers. And so this is kind of that warning light for us, is when we're looking for direction. When you think about sexual immorality, it's really a desire for satisfaction. And when you start thinking about satisfaction, there's a lot of physical things that can bring satisfaction, all the way from food to sex. And there's a way that God created for these satisfactions to be met in a way that is fully fulfilling to us. He's created boundaries for us. And so often what happens, and I'm not going to linger here long, but let me just say it. So often what happens in sex, when it happens outside of marriage, is what people don't realize is that what's happening now can become a hindrance to what is next. What is shared in a moment between couples who are not married will hinder when couples become married. And I don't know how else to explain it other than you just have to know that what is next is greater than what is now. You have to trust God in that. We have to trust God in that. Moving on, now that I made us all uncomfortable. When we test the Lord our God, we're looking for provision. Because when they started complaining, they were complaining because they were hungry and thirsty. You get hungry and thirsty, right? I get hungry and thirsty. In fact, Sarah and I have a word for it in our house. We get hangry. Can you blame them? But this wasn't just because they missed a meal or two. This was because they had missed several days. And when they looked around, there was no signs of water. There were no signs of food. They were looking for provision. You ever had a need in your life? Sometimes God seems slow to meet the need. And it's in these moments that the God of now, we look for a way to provide for ourselves. When God says, if you'll just hold on, I have a better way to provide for you. You know, we can miss out on a lot of blessings very simply because we try and do it our own way and have our own answers. God's just saying, hold on. Now, let me try and give a little bit of advice here. From my own experience, I pursue every option. And sometimes that probably does keep me from missing blessings. But here's what I've learned. Sometimes you have to walk up to the door of every option. And when it's closed, you say, okay, that wasn't it. And you go to the next one. That wasn't it. I don't know. I don't see any more options. And then all of a sudden it's like the Red Sea parts and you're like, oh, that's it. So there is this part where we have to go, but I just want you to know that when we have a need, the God of now will always tempt us to find our own way and to do it in our own strength. And God says, but I have something better for you. And then when the people grumbled, I think this is what it came down to. Their expectations weren't met. They expected to be at the promised land a whole lot sooner than when Moses got them there. And I'll be honest, I don't blame them. You come out of Egypt and you're wandering in the wilderness for a while, you're thinking, I don't see any promised land. And so when our expectations aren't met, and here's the bad part about expectations, we often don't know we have expectations until they're not met. You'll find this to be true in relationships. You don't know that you have expectations of the other person until they don't meet them. And then you're torqued at them and they don't even know that they were supposed to do it in the first place. Not that I have first-hand experience in that. I always know what Sarah expects of me. Pride comes before a fall, Jonathan. You can laugh. It's okay. I gave you in your worship folder some next steps that I took right out of really just when he starts talking about temptations. I think the first thing that you should know that this temptation of the God of now versus what God has next for us, what Paul says, all of us have that temptation. So whatever our greatest weakness is, we always think that we're the only one who experiences that. It's not. It's a lie. Satan's whole plan is to always seclude us and make us feel isolated in our problems and our weaknesses. I assure you that you are not going through something what someone else either in this room or somewhere hasn't also been through. You're not alone. Don't let Satan win in the private time of your life to just degrade you and make you feel ashamed that you've not overcome this. You're not the only one in the battle. So it's common to all mankind. But then he starts giving us some tips. He says, so if you think you're standing firm, be careful you don't fall. It's like trying to walk on ice. Now maybe as you get older, you get wiser, but I'm still young and so I'm still unwise in a lot of ways. I don't need to be careful. I can do this. And so you go walking across the ice and all of a sudden, whoop, I should have walked slower. And you know how you have to start getting the shuffle on the ice? Be careful, because you know at any moment when you're walking on ice, you could lose your footing. These are the words of Paul. Watch your step. Be careful to know that as Christians, even baptized Christians filled with the Spirit of God, knowing God is present, you're following Him to the best ability, just know that there is a weak point. Just know that at any moment a foot could slip. Now, I want to be careful. Don't think of it as losing your salvation, but think of it as stumbling into sin. That could lead to that, but we have to be careful. So here's my question. Who or what is your guardrail? Who or what is your warning light that will go off and say, you're on dangerous territory? See, there's warning lights in our cars. There's a reason there's lights to tell us danger could be ahead. You might want to check this. And that's why you want to fix those lights. This is free advice. Because if you don't fix it, other things could be going wrong, but you just think it's still the same thing. So go ahead and get them fixed. Because the lights are to warn us. Who is the warning light? What boundaries do you have set that you say, you know what? When I get close to this, when I feel this way, I know. Like I know that I have to be careful because here comes the temptation. So watch your step. Plan your escape. There's so much I could preach on this, but I won't. Whatever your temptation is, whatever my temptation is, what's our plan to get out of it? Because here's my guess. For most people, whatever the temptation is, you've been in it before. And sometimes it's for a season and sometimes it's for a lifetime. What is the temptation? You've been in it before, and what you learn is that there's mile markers along the way before you get to the exit. You know it's coming. So when it comes, how's your plan to get out of it? Can I say, i.e. enter sexual temptation, relationships, Who's the person that you call? Who's the person that you text when you say, this is not a good situation. We can't put ourselves in this situation. What is your escape plan? Now, here's a place where I wish the Bible was written in pencil. Just wipe it out. He says that He'll provide a way out. So there's the escape plan. So that we can what? Endure it. You know, sometimes the only thing you can do is to stand in the rain and to stand in the midst of the storm and wait for it to stop. There are some struggles in life, the only thing you can do is stand and wait for it to be over. I wish I had better news for you than that. But the preacher man has to be real. And I know some people that what they face for a long time. But they've been faithful to stand. You know why? Because Christ has been faithful to hold them up. He is their firm right hand. And I assure you there will be a day that it will end. But sometimes we just have to stand up and say, I will endure it because Christ endured it for me. And the end will come. And finally, sometimes the only thing you can do, are you ready? Run. Run. It ended with, flee from all adultery. Here's what I've noticed. You can't just run from something or you always run back to it. If we're running from something, we have to run to something. So we have nothing to run to. We'll just run around in circles until we wind up right back where we were. Now, none of you will admit this because I know I can just read the crowd. I know it's one of them days. Every one of you have done this. And I have too. You think you're doing so good by getting out of the situation, but you don't have anywhere place to go. You don't confess to anybody or you don't let them know or you don't ask anybody to pray for you. You don't get in a group and you just wind up right back where you started and you think, here it is again. I had the escape plan and I got out, but I had nowhere to go. He is our hope and stay. When we cannot stand, we fall on Him. And guess what? We fall on one another. There's a reason we do groups around here. Because we need each other. We need each other. When we have fallen, we need someone to say, just come and sit with us and say, it's okay, I love you. It's all right, when you're ready to get up, let's get up. And sometimes we need people to drag us back up and say, let's get up. It's time to go. That's why we do groups. We need those people in our lives to help us. When I think about communion and what it means to us, I can't help but think about the temptations of Jesus. See, before Jesus was ever tempted on the cross, and He was tempted because they said, if you are the Son of Man, come down. Prove it to us. He could have, right then, the God of now was before Him and He could have missed what was next. He didn't have to go through it. If you rewind, actually, at the start of Jesus' ministry, Satan tempts them 3 times. And Satan promises to give them everything now so that he doesn't have to go through what is next. But you know why He went through what was next? For you and for me. Because He knew that what was best is what would come next. And so He was able to forfeit what was now because He wanted that for us. So as we receive the bread and cup today, we're reminded, even when we get this wrong, even when we give in to the God of now, Christ came. He overcame temptation so that we can too, and that when we don't, His sacrifice is sufficient for our sin. Amen? Amen.